Yeah, I mean, it definitely, it's kind of twofold. So on one hand, it actually, when I'm on camera or when I'm at work, it's a great distraction for me. Like, even if I'm having a bad day or I'm having kind of going through an episode, once I get up and get going and I'm at work and I'm interacting with people and I'm talking and I have something to really focus on, it's a huge help for me. It actually alleviates a lot of my anxiety, which probably seems weird that being on camera would do that, but it's kind of like a, you know, you're just looking at a camera, right? And you're around mm-hmm. people that you're comfortable with in my office and things like that. But on the other hand, it does cause some extra anxiety because you're, you know, one, I shared something really personal, and two, I internalize things a lot. You know, a lot of my anxiety kind of comes from, you know, wanting to be perfect and wanting to be really good at what I do and wanting to sort of be a lot of things for a lot of people. And so when you're in the public eye and you're out there and you're open to criticism, you know, the way that I take criticism might be different. Someone else might be able to just easily brush it off every day. For me, sometimes it's a little harder. So it's kind of twofold. But I would say that on most days, the positives outweigh the negatives.
Can you share the story from the Globe column about how what happened to Junior Seau affected you?
Yeah, you know, at that point, it was 2012 when he passed away, and at that point, I think I had been diagnosed for probably 12. I think I was diagnosed first in 2000 or 2001, although I think I knew I had issues dating back to when I was probably in middle school, so and just didn't know what it was. And when he took his own life, it just really hit me because those thoughts, I think, enter a lot of people's minds who struggle with mental illness. And you understand the depths of the despair and the sadness and the sorrow and the loneliness and helplessness that someone in that situation can feel. And just feeling so alone, like you're the only person and like you're, you know, crazy and you're the only one that's going through something like that. And it just really hit me that this was a guy that I had grown up, but kind of, you know, we're sort of the same age range. So I had watched play football for a long time. He was, again, sort of in my age group. You know, I had interviewed him and interacted with him very, you know, sort of tangentially, like at a press conference or a, you know, sort of a media scrum, but still had, you know, some sort of personal contact with. It just really hit me on that day that, God, you know, we're not talking about this enough, and so many people feel so alone. And if someone like that, you know, who seems larger than life, can get to a point where they feel that suicide is the only option, I just sort of it felt like maybe it was time to talk about everything that, you know, I was dealing with, that maybe it would help others, but maybe it would also help me.
Hi, this is Bruce. One of the things I wanted to ask you about is reactions you've gotten from people. I teach creative writing, and I am at the University of Maine, and I'm astonished every year by the number of young women who confide in their memoirs problems they've had with anxiety, depression, panic attacks, and how that sense you just talked about of being totally isolated, totally alone, nobody understands this. Have you been getting any feedback since you've been more public about this as to the positive effects of what you've done for others?
Yeah, it's actually pretty overwhelming. I am astonished every time that I speak out and there's an article written, you know, whether it's in the Globe or my hometown magazine, or maybe I post something on Twitter or talk about it. You know, when Robin Williams died last year or 2 years ago now, you know, when I'm Toucher and Rich and talked about my experience. And the people who, you know, sort of reach out to me, that some that, you know, you wouldn't know if you saw on the street and are, you know, teachers and accountants and nurses and doctors, but also the number of people in the media, athletes, colleagues who may be behind the scenes but have never told anybody that they suffer from depression, anxiety, OCD, that pull me aside. And to, you know, to have them trust me with their story is really just an honor. And I feel, you know, grateful that I've sort of drawn a link for them, and that maybe they feel a little less alone and that we're all sort of in this community together. Now, if we could just take that and I think turn it into a bigger movement to get better help for people and more accessible mental health treatment, that would be the best outcome from all of this.
We're talking with Trini Kuznarek, Comcast SportsNet New England. I started incorporating meditation into my daily routine a while back. Can you tell us what meditation and exercise have done for you?
Yeah, meditation is pretty important because it kind of helps. Like I said, I have a really busy mind. I'm a worrier. I've always been a worrier. I think I'm on a 25. I have an app that tracks, how many days I do it and gives me guided meditation. So I think I'm on a 25-day streak. So I'm pretty happy with that. And then exercise, it just, those are those natural endorphins, right? So you always feel better afterwards. Some days I can't do it. Some days I just can't get off the couch and go for a run. I know I should, but I just can't, which is okay. But I do know that I try to go and I try to schedule workouts. Like, I still have a day planner, like an actual one that you write in, not one that's on your phone or computer. And I try to actually write down, and schedule classes at different gyms and different yoga and boxing and treadmill classes and spin classes and things like that. Because if it's in my calendar and I have it on my schedule, I'm much more likely to stick with it and do it. And I know that when I go to something like that, I always feel better afterwards. But with that said, I still use medication. Actually, recently, when Kevin wrote the article, I wasn't on any anti-anxiety medication. I was just on one that helps me sleep. But my anxiety is sort of returned, and to get it under control within like a couple of weeks actually of him writing that, I was trying to get into a doctor to get a prescription because it's just there, and it's something that no matter how much meditation I do, no matter how much exercise, medicine's still a really important part of sort of my self-care, I guess.
On another matter, we had Julie DeCaro from out in Chicago on our show not too long ago, and we've talked about this with people like Leslie Visser, Jen McCaffrey down on the Boston beat. The abuse and the reactions, many of them inappropriate, many of them just flat-out disgusting, that women in sports media have to deal with, primarily on social media platforms. Have you had to face that as well along the way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I will say it's pervasive, but yet it's isolated, if that makes sense. Like, you kind of know who the people are, right? And it's kind of the same kind of person that comes after you. And even if you block them, they tend to create a new account. So it's kind of like whack-a-mole. You block somebody and somebody else pops back up. And it's worse, I have found, when you express an opinion. When you're just a traditional beat reporter or anchor or sideline reporter, somebody might say something about your appearance, they don't like your outfit, or they may get pretty vile. But I think it's evolved now to where women are fairly accepted in what I think people assume are female roles that are okay. Female roles, stereotypical female roles. But now that we've sort of started diving into, talk radio and opinion shows, that's where I feel where now the most backlash comes. So if I do a feature story or I anchor SNC, I probably hear nothing. If I go on Early Edition or Sports Tonight or The Baseball Show or Sports Sunday and I express an opinion about something or someone, that's when the claws come out. And it's tough. It's like, it's a catch-22, because if you're not on social media, then you can't interact with people and you miss a lot of things. But when you are on, you kind of have to filter through the garbage. And it's not always easy. Some days it's easier than others. And I know Julie, has had to deal with a lot of crap. Certainly I would say worse than anything I've had to deal with in any recent memory.
Now, I understand you've got some big plans for your 40th birthday.
Well, it's still almost a year away. Let's not rush me to middle age, guys. I'm almost there. I'm kind of trying to like weigh my options. I do want to take a really big trip, and I'm not trying to figure out where I want to go or what I want to do, but I love traveling. I love international travel. And if I can get them to give me some extended time off, I've thrown out a couple of things. I've either, The New York Times, which is where the Jordan idea came up, they do these trips where you actually go to different countries in different parts of the world with a reporter or an expert in a certain field. and you kind of learn about the culture and the history of a place, and you interact with locals. And there was one in Jordan, and it was, you know, women in the Middle East and growing up female in an Islamic society. That really kind of stuck out to me that I thought would be interesting. But I also have always really wanted to do an African safari. And I've also, I'm sort of into Eastern religions. Obviously, I meditate. Buddhism's always kind of been a draw, and I've been to India. But I'd also like to get to maybe like Thailand and Vietnam and that part of the world. So those are kind of the three places I'm thinking about, three kind of vastly different places, I guess.